Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, welcome back. Welcome back to the podcast, that is. Welcome back to our listeners as well. Sorry again for the silence. Bunty was traveling. I had some other stuff to do, but, I know we keep promising this and we really try and keep the promise this time of being more regular. So Bunty, you just had this incredible trip to India. You go back to India every year for the pujas, but you also went this time to Bandhavgarh and Kanha, both of which are in Madhya Pradesh. And, among the many experiences you had, just being in nature by yourself, secluded space, you also saw this tiger, which, it's a pretty fantastic experience. I can imagine I've just put up the video that you sent me and we've already got about 100 views. So thanks to people who follow us on Twitter for actually seeing this. I think last year we had done that road trip and, we had seen some interesting wildlife, aquatic wildlife, and this time you saw the tiger. So just tell me about all of this. Tell me about the trip and what was it like, and what was the experience like?
It's great to be back on the podcast again and recording fresh midweek with you. I think this was. I've been to a lot of other national parks as well. But this was my first time in Madhya Pradesh, which calls itself the heart of incredible India. And I stayed in two fantastic places and fantastic for their own reasons. In Kanha, I was with a lovely small hotel called the Courtyard House. And again, this is not a plug. Nobody's getting paid for this. I'm just saying it was a nice place to go for me. If other people want, more than welcome. It's a small place. In what is ostensibly a very large area of forest. I think it's 60 by 40 kilometers in the space of Kanha. So the chances of seeing something in this season, which is October, is not that good because it's not the dry season and water is easily accessible. So animals pretty much are far away from the roads that lead in and out of the forest. That said, Bandhavgarh, which I went to second time, and the video that which we put up on our account is from that trip, was a remarkable experience, and particularly that tiger sighting, because I think one of the things that I do in the forests is, I like the period of reflection and contemplation that it allows, that nature allows, because there's not much to do. You go into the forest 5 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon. And I saw two tigers, actually. This, the one that we've put up, is the one that that I saw in the morning on the first day. It was literally my first safari in Bandhavgarh, and I saw a tiger. But in the seeing of the tiger has an interesting story, and it's taught. There's a metaphor in it which I want to kind of discuss further with you and share with our listeners. So yeah, it was a great trip. Have you seen the video, Rohit? Do you like the video?
I like it. And there's something about it that it brought back memories of traveling in rural Bengal, but also in rural Orissa. I kind of grew up all over the country, and sometimes we would have these trips. They were rare, but I remember in childhood in Orissa going to actually a fairly remote place. My father was working at the steel plant out then. There's something about an Indian forest. You also get glimpses of it when you take train journeys. It has its own character in a way that the forests of California have their own character. But, I want to just, also sort of mention something that you've spoken about, which is that you had a very nice experience at these places. And so often, whether it's media, whether it's conversations that, people have, as Indians or as Indian origin, people, we talk about, everything that's wrong with India, the touts who try and hustle you, the people who crowd you, the hordes that sort of descend on you when you're trying to see the Taj Mahal, for instance, or someone trying to cheat you. And all of that does happen. But along with that, there's such a large number of people who work jobs that are not necessarily the best paid. They're difficult jobs, but they're decent, good, nice people. They do their jobs with pride and they do their jobs well. And I think, there's something heroic about that. And I think that that to me is, you know, and you find a lot of people like that in the government as well. I mean, the stereotype about Indian government and bureaucracy is this, you know, is that of like corruption and ineptitude and laziness. And I think sometimes that obscures the fact that there are, I still think the majority of people are actually sort of decent, ethical and work hard. So I just wanted to put that out. But yeah, so what was it? What was it like? I mean,
Well, look, I think what you just said in kind of the framing of this Tiger sighting is really, really something that goes to the heart of the observation that I was going to build on, which is that, you know, there's such a lot of media commentary and political commentary on the bad that is in the world. So women getting hassled, kids getting raped, corruption, nepotism, etc. And sometimes you get, because you focus on these headlines, you think that, you know, that is what this is all about. The country is all about this. And in my travels over the last 10 days, I met really remarkable people, and all of them very courteous, very nice, nobody trying to hustle anybody. And you know, you feel that actually at ground level in the day-to-day dealings of people, they're really decent, hardworking, capable people. The Tiger sighting was in part a result of, just to elaborate. So when you go into a forest in India, you have to go in a Jeep. You can take the Jeep all by yourself, which comes at a premium, or you can share it with other people, and then you kind of share the cost. No matter what combination you go out in, you will have to have a driver who obviously is going to be qualified to drive the Jeep, because it's not like normal driving. Some people blag that they can drive in the jungles, but it's not that easy, because you're driving of basically a four-wheeled Maruti Gypsy. It's not easy driving. It's not easy driving. So you need somebody who's very good at driving, backing up, going up and down hills. Over and above that, you've got somebody from the forest department who accompanies that Jeep so that nothing untoward happens, or somebody from the government is there. Mm-hmm. So for this, I think there was this, me and this another guy who was based at the moment. He was from MP, but he was spending time in Lucknow doing some projects. He was basically a guy who operated the camera, right, for documentary filmmakers, right? He was addicted to a gutka. So he is this, he comes across at first sighting as, you know, a stereotype kind of Madhya Pradesh, like a cameraman in doing kind of an item number song, right? Mm-hmm. So if you imagine that there's an item number happening and there's going to be a cameraman, slightly lecherous, partial to Panparag, overweight. So he's not like your typical National Geographic, cameraman already. So when I first met him, I thought, oh, this could be interesting. And then he said to me, what would you like to do? And we were having this conversation in Hindi. What would you like to do? Do you want to go and bomb around the forest for 5 hours? Because we can do that, right? Because all of us are paying for this Jeep. So, and I come here fairly often because it's the nature of my work. Or would you like to park in front of a particular area where the guide and me, we know what the signs are for a tiger to be there. And we'll have to, but the thing is, we'll have to, there's no certainty, we'll have to wait for, of the 5 hours that you're paying for, you might have to wait 2-3 hours and nothing may happen. So you literally would have spent all of the trip, 3 hours of it sitting in one place, 1 hour driving up to it and 1 hour driving back, and that would be your jungle safari done. Right, and he didn't know that I had 3 or 4 other safaris. That it could go, for all you knew, it could be the only thing that I was doing, that one safari. So, but the way he laid out the case, I thought, okay, you clearly have the experience. So let us invest our time, effort, and energy in just observing and seeing what happens. And we took account of the fact that the risk is that nothing may come of it. Now, as we were parked and stood still, in that area of the forest, there were about 12 other Jeeps that got a permit, right, for that moment, with a limit number. And all of the Jeeps were bombing up and around us, and they were asking us courteously why we were waiting. The guides were asking one another. And we were saying, because we think there is a tiger here. And they were like, some of them were smirking, some of them were thinking it's silly. And we're going away and doing other things. And the typical drill is you bomb around the forest, you drive around in the hope that a tiger crosses or you see something obviously. And we waited for about 1 hour, 15, 20 minutes. And then the bit of the video that we've shared, I managed to pick up. It was fantastic. And I think what I liked was the way the tiger emerged was from the background. It gently walked through, absolutely oblivious to us being there. There was a couple of other people who joined. And I think the metaphor for me, and I'll stop because I've been kind of elaborating how this kind of panned out, was that, you know, how two people who were thrown into a jeep by complete chance talked about what we wanted to achieve. Both of us wanted to see a tiger. And the other gentleman, he basically said that, you know, there's a certain risk that you need to take by investing the amount of time that you have by doing kind of being very contemplative and observational. And that will lead to results, right? Or the other route is that you spend the next 5 hours in a frenzy of driving around the park. And the choice is yours, you know, what would you like to do? And I made the choice of kind of being still, and that worked out for me. So, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I do think that there is something that I've learned out of this experience, which is that you sometimes it's better to kind of find some semblance of stillness, because in our lives and in our work. You know, it all gets so hectic. And sometimes I feel that I'm thrashing around, right, in my day-to-day life. I don't know how you feel, that, you know, you're driving around the jungle in a, you know, to use the metaphor, you're chasing your tail. And sometimes what we might need to do for success is just wait, because wait, observe, and watch the signs, and then it'll come to us. But yeah, I know this has kind of been slightly tangential, this whole episode. The two call-outs for me is today WWF have come up with a statistic that in the last 40 years, 60% of the wildlife on the planet has declined. That's the wild animals have declined. And at the same time, China has come up with a legislation that makes it illegal to use animal body parts as long as they are from animals that have been farmed, right? Now, both of these things, first the decline of the number of animals, wild animals, and the fact that the Chinese government today has said that you can use tiger tooth and rhino horn, as long as they're farmed for Chinese medication, and there is no benefits that can be traced to using rhino horn or tiger claws. That's the other adjunct point that I wanted to make, that, you know, I'd encourage everybody to try and go for wildlife tourism because it helps the local economy. And I think in a kind of a thrice removed way, helps the conservation of these fantastic animals. So yeah, I'll roll it over to you because I suddenly feel that I've been kind of going around in circles.
No, it's all really interesting. I just should apologize for an occasional echo that's coming in. I'm just in a different location in my house and sorry to our listeners for that, but I think for the most part, you know, we should be all right. I think you've raised many issues, and I'm actually going to start with, you know, one point, which I think we should come back and talk about, because, you know, it's something that I suppose it's kind of inevitable to think about, you know, at this stage in life. You use the word success, right? And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the last few years, I want to say that, you know, what does success mean? What does failure mean? You know, you hear all these stories from the time you're a kid, you know, King Bruce and the spider. And then you hear these things so many times, which is that, you know, it's the journey that matters. It's the effort that matters. You see them as sort of cliches. And now, you know, I sort of tend to see the, you know, value of much of what has been said, you know, about really what are the things in life that matter. I'm not romanticizing poverty. And I think the sort of challenge here is that, you know, I face it in San Francisco, for instance, where there is a lot of this sort of narrative of, you know, kind of be yourself. And San Francisco maybe is kind of the fount of all of this, right? With Hate Ashbury and the hippies and all. So just be yourself and, you know, city of like love and, you know, chill out and peace out, man, and this, that. But at the same time, the same people are like also intensely competitive. Like Marin County, which is basically a county which is a very high real estate value. It's also a place where, which is very homogenous, I should say, white, largely white upper middle class. They're all ex-hippies, right? People used to listen to the Grateful Dead. So that's one thing. And, you know, and it may be interesting sort of talking about, you know, as people who've now sort of been working for 20 years, 25 years, you know, what we think about this issue. I think it'll resonate with a lot of our, listeners, especially those in the 35 to, I guess, 50 age category. The second point is about, you know, with regard to taking things slowly, there's immense, immense value in that. I just want to share an anecdote that I, few weeks ago, I was invited by a professor to deliver a lecture at Creighton University, which is in Omaha, in Nebraska. And, you know, it was a wonderful opportunity. It was a sort of lecture on global Bollywood. And I also took a class teaching, you know, Bollywood from a particular perspective. And there's a very smart young man there. And it turns out, you know, and we were talking about just the rituals, social rituals that happen around movies. And one of the things that happens is what is called loitering, right? Like there are large numbers of young men who loiter in India. And we were talking right. really about the different, I mean, pardon my sort of academic digression, but we were talking about the different temporalities that, you know, earlier you had to go hours in advance. You had to stand in line. You had to decide whether you'd buy a ticket in black or not. There's all kinds of people waiting, you know, during the break or songs, men would typically go out, have a smoke. And now the whole temporality of viewing has changed, as has the sort of class composition of watching a movie, because movie theaters were places where you came into contact with, you know, literally people from like a range of social classes. Now with the multiplex experience, it's all changed. But we spoke a bit about loitering, and he just shared, this young man shared, that he's the great nephew of Ashish Nandi. You know, you can disagree with Ashish Nandi, you can find him infuriating, but I think you can't deny that he's an enormously provocative Indian thinker. And he said that a piece of advice his great uncle gave him is that the most productive thing you can do is waste time. And if, you know, and I would put waste time in inverted commas, because there's really no such thing as wasting time, because your mind is always working. And I think that's where the value of stillness comes in, that, you know, we, yeah, I, for me, like for you, it's just been, it's been a race for the last decade, particularly, I'd say, really for the last 20 years, but especially for the last decade. And then, you know, in the last, I'd say, few months, things have, you know, I've slowed down things a bit, and I've wrapped up a few commitments, and I'm not going to take a few things on. And I'm embarking on a new academic project. And for me, the most, one of the most pleasurable aspects is just, you know, walking and thinking about it. And I wish I had the opportunity to do more. So I think there's tremendous, tremendous value on that, in that. And then this, you know, just the tragedy of the loss of wildlife is something that leaves me at a loss for words. And here, you know, I just want to acknowledge someone like Valmik Thapar, who's a conservationist and who's probably done more for the cause of Indian tigers than anyone. But I think China's made a regressive move. In America, we have similar moves where recently they were allowing bears to be hunted, I think, at Yellowstone. And a judge blocked the order. And you know, it sort of breaks my heart every time I see, you know, there've been stories on Twitter about, the habitat of elephants being destroyed, and elephants are now, you know, coming into contact with electric wires and getting electrocuted in the Northeast and so on. So it's, you know, I think we really need to do something there, and we need some genuine leadership from the government on that front, at least at the Indian level.
Well, look, I think there are two. We need to wrap this up, because I think there are three separate things we've picked up on. One is this idea of stillness in the middle of very frenzied lives that we lead, which is there is value in doing that, which is one of the things that we wanted to talk about and we were talking about earlier on. The second is this idea, the importance of finding time, effort, and energy for wildlife conservation, not just for viewing pleasure, but just for maintaining the diversity of life on the planet, which is something that is very precious. And that is constantly being challenged, you know, by the actions of the Chinese government, or the statistics that the WWF have released today. And the final thing, that the essential goodness of people, which is sometimes, you know, easily gets lost in the headlines. And you know, when you visit different parts of the country, people going about doing, you know, their day-to-day job, it's remarkable that they genuinely want to help you do what you want to get done. And as you rightly pointed out earlier on, that by and large, most people come to the table with good intentions, irrespective of what the media commentary would have you believe. So those are the three things that I'd call out, Rohit, on the back of that video, among other things. And yeah, 5 hours is a long time. And, you know, at one stage when we were waiting at the hour mark, I was beginning to think this is a really a stupid waste of time, because, you know, you could have been in the middle of an abandoned high road looking at a bunch of trees for a huge amount of money, but it paid off.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I'll just, we've been speaking for a while, so I'll say a couple of things that we also get, we've been trained and socialized through digital media or whatever, many things, to become more impatient. But I remember that when we would travel by train in India as children, you just get used to spending those hours. You know, I would just look out of the window and see, like, you know, you just see the scenery rushing by. And I would be able to look at it for like long periods of time. But now, you know, on flights, I get bored. I haven't taken a train journey in a bit of time, but I get restless. So, you know, it's maybe an art that we've lost as well. I mean, I also get restless on long concerts. Especially classical concerts where you're supposed to be quiet and stay still, you know, as and when I do go for them. So I make sure that I go for ones where I really, you know, want to listen to what's being played. But I think we should go back to each of these issues. I think, you know, we should go back to something about this experience of being from India and of being of this age. It'll, you know, may narrow our listenership for those odd, you know, episodes a little bit, because it may not be of interest to people who are older or younger, but I think we should definitely explore each of these themes in itself, which is, you know, just the value and the significance of all the people who do their jobs on a daily basis in, and as I said, for me, there's something heroic about it, in an ethical and decent way, and the question of stillness, and then, you know, being sort of middle-aged, being a middle-aged Indian man anywhere in the world, because I think that's the sort of demographic we can speak to. So maybe on that note, we should wrap this up. And yeah, we'll have this up in a little bit. And then this weekend, we'll have more episodes. And hopefully, we stay on track.
All right. Chalo, take care. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.